Accountability systems. All personnel and equipment assigned to the incident must be tracked via an accountability system, Figure 25.32. Most units responding to an incident arrive fully staffed and ready to be assigned an operational objective. Other personnel may have to be formed into units at the scene. To handle these and other differences in the available resources, the IAP must contain a tracking and accountability system that has the following elements. Procedure for checking in at the scene. Way of identifying and tracking the location of each unit and all personnel on scene. Procedure for releasing people, equipment, and apparatus that are no longer needed. Accountability systems are especially important for incidents involving multiple agencies and organizations. All these agencies may have different levels of PPE and training. The agency/organization in command is responsible for tracking all responders, not just their own. Therefore, determine methods for tracking accountability in pre-plans and implement them as soon as possible at the incident scene. Types of accountability systems include fire service passport systems, T-card systems for wildland incidents, GPS and GIS note, NFPA 1515-61 address accountability system requirements, buddy systems and backup personnel. NFPA and OSHA mandate the use of buddy systems and backup personnel at hazmat incidents. A buddy system organizes personnel into workgroups containing at least two members so that nobody works alone. The buddy system's primary benefit is to provide rapid help if there is an emergency. If one person becomes incapacitated, the other can call for help and provide immediate assistance. In addition to using the buddy system, backup personnel must be in place and prepared to enter the hot zone with appropriate equipment to provide assistance or rescue if necessary. Backup personnel must be dressed in the same level of personal protective clothing as entry personnel, Figure 25.33. Time, distance, and shielding. Using time, distance, and shielding is an effective strategy to protect first responders at hazmat incidents. The following describes the ways in which these strategies protect responders. Time, limiting the time to which responders are exposed, or potentially exposed, to hazards and hazardous materials reduces the likelihood they will suffer serious harm. To limit the time of hazard exposure, restrict work times in the hot zone, and frequently rotate personnel on work groups. Distance, maximizing distance from potential hazards will often prevent or reduce harm. The closer a responder is to the source of an explosion, the greater the harmful effects will be. Staying away from hazardous areas will also prevent harmful exposures. Distance may be controlled by implementing hazard control zones. Shielding. Shielding places a physical barrier between a responder and the hazard. Shielding may consist of wearing PPE or positioning personnel so that another object, such as a wall, building, or apparatus, is between the responder and the hazard, thereby minimizing the chance of contact or harmful effect. Evacuation/escape procedures. At hazmat incidents, a signaling system should be used that will advise personnel inside the danger area when to evacuate. The FEMA USNR Task Force Program has developed a system for evacuating rescuers from dangerous areas. Notification can be made using devices such as handheld CO2 boat air horns, air horns on fire apparatus, vehicle horns. Other communication methods in the event of an emergency can include portable radios, voice, hand signals, and the use of other predetermined signals. The USNR designated signals and their meanings are as follows. Cease operations/all quiet, 1 long blast, 3 seconds. Evacuate the area, 3 short blasts, 1 second each. Resume operations, 1 long and 1 short blast. Responders must also plan multiple escape procedures. If the primary means of egress becomes blocked, rescuers should determine the possibility of using the alternate route. Protection of the public. Measures to protect the public include such operations as conducting rescues, performing mass decontamination, and providing emergency medical care and first aid. Additional measures include evacuation, sheltering in place, and protecting/defending in place. The IC selects the best option or combination of options based on the incident. Rescue. Based on the nature of the incident, victims may be found in a variety of locations, such as out in the open or within a structure or a confined space. Before attempting a rescue, evaluate the location and viability of the victim as well as available tools and equipment. If the decision is made to attempt a rescue, safety should be a paramount concern. The IC makes decisions about rescue based on a variety of factors at the incident. The following factors affect the ability of personnel to perform a rescue: nature of the hazardous material and incident severity, training, availability of appropriate PPE, availability of monitoring equipment, number of victims and their conditions, time needed to complete a rescue, tools, equipment, and other devices needed to perform the rescue. First responders without mission-specific training should avoid contact with hazardous materials. Viable victims who are contaminated should be moved as carefully as possible and transferred to the care of medical responders located within the initial isolation zone or hot zone. If there are injured victims at the scene, first responders must always be aware of the potential dangers of contamination and the need to decontaminate as part of the treatment process. They must follow local procedures for determining prioritization of emergency medical care and decontamination. Actions that can be taken without risk of contamination include directing people to an area of safe refuge or evacuation point located in a safe place within the hot zone that is upwind and uphill of the hazard area. Instructing victims to move to an area that is less dangerous before moving them to an area that offers complete safety. Directing contaminated or potentially contaminated victims to an isolation point, safe refuge area, safety shower, eyewash facility, or decontamination area, figure 25.34. Giving directions to a large number of people for mass decontamination. Conducting searches during reconnaissance or defensive activities. Conducting searches on the edge of the hot zone. Evacuation. To evacuate means to move all people from a threatened area to a safer place. To perform an evacuation, there must be enough time to warn people, for them to prepare to leave, and for them to leave the area by a safe route, uphill, upwind, etc. Generally, if there is enough time for evacuation, it is the best protective action. Emergency responders should begin evacuating people who are most threatened by the incident in accordance with distances recommended by the ERG, pre-incident surveys, or other sources. Even after people move these recommended distances, they are not necessarily completely safe from harm. Do not permit evacuees to congregate at the scene. Instead, send them to a designated place or area of safe refuge along a specific route. The number of responders needed to perform an evacuation varies with the size of the area and number of people to evacuate. Evacuation can be an expensive, labor-intensive operation. Therefore, it is important to assign enough personnel resources to conduct it. Evacuation and traffic control activities on the downwind side could cause responders and evacuees to become contaminated and, consequently, need decontamination. Responders may also need to wear PPE to safely conduct the evacuation. The local emergency response plan should include a pre-plan for evacuation, including casualties, for likely terrorist targets such as stadiums and other public gathering places. The IC must address the following factors regarding large-scale evacuations. Notification: alert the public of the need to evacuate and tell them where they should go. The local emergency response plan details the notification methods. Relay clear and concise information to avoid confusion or additional panic. Notification methods include knocking on doors, public address systems, radio, TV, sirens, building alarms, short message service, SMS, through cell phones, text messages. Reverse 911. Emergency Alerting System, EAS, in the United States. Loudspeakers mounted on helicopters or emergency vehicles. Electronic billboards. Transportation. Plan in advance, alternate means of transportation, such as school buses, public transit systems, planes, trains, boats, barges, and ferries, figure 25.35. Relocation facilities and temporary shelters, Designate appropriate evacuation shelters in the local emergency response plan. Determine staffing arrangements in advance. Shelters must be able to provide food, water, medicine, bathroom and shower facilities, and places to sleep for evacuations of long duration, figure 25.36. Establish an information/registration system to track the whereabouts of evacuees so their friends and relatives can find them. Re-entry. Consider how people will be allowed to return to evacuated areas. Individuals who have been exposed or potentially exposed to chemical, biological, or radiological agents must be decontaminated. While it may be impossible to keep these individuals at the scene, efforts to keep them in place should be made in order to prevent the spread of harmful or potentially deadly materials to other locations. Evacuate contaminated or potentially contaminated individuals to an area of safe refuge, or a triage and treatment area as appropriate, within the isolation perimeter to await decontamination. Because victims may leave the scene before emergency responders arrive, or ignore requests to stay in order to undergo DECON, shelters, hospitals, and other public healthcare facilities must be prepared to conduct DECON of people who walk in on their own or with help from others. Sheltering in place. Sheltering in place means to direct people to go quickly inside or to stay inside a room or a building and remain inside until danger passes. Some situations may make sheltering in place preferable to evacuation. The decision to shelter in place may be guided by the following factors. The population is unable to initiate evacuation because of healthcare, detention, or educational occupancies. The material is spreading too rapidly to allow time for evacuation. The material is too toxic to risk any exposure. Vapors are heavier than air, and people are in a high-rise or multi-level structure, figure 25.37. When protecting people inside a structure, close all doors, windows, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. Vehicles are not as effective as buildings for sheltering in place, but they can offer temporary protection if windows are closed and the ventilation system is turned off. First responders should also pay attention to the condition of surrounding buildings before ordering sheltering in place. Some areas may have old and dilapidated structures without air conditioning or with openings between floorboards. Sheltering in place might not provide sufficient protection in such cases, making evacuation the better option. Similarly, evacuation may be a better option than sheltering in place when explosive vapors or gases are involved, for two reasons. These vapors or gases may take a long time to dissipate from the surrounding environment. Vapors or gases may permeate into any building that cannot be sealed from the outside atmosphere. Whether using evacuation or shelter in place, inform the public as early as possible and provide additional instructions and information throughout the course of an emergency. Sheltering in place may be more effective if public education has been initiated ahead of the incident via emergency planning. Protecting/defending in place. Protecting/defending in place is an active, offensive, role or aggressive posture to physically protect those individuals in harm's way. When appropriate and safe to do so, defending in place eliminates the need for unnecessary evacuations, which, if initiated, will require additional logistical support to ensure the health and safety of civilians who are protected in place. Actions that may be taken during this kind of operation include using hose streams to diffuse a plume, figure 25.38. Securing a neighborhood or area. Turning off HVAC systems to minimize spread of contaminants. Protection of the environment and property. Exposure protection is a defensive control tactic. Most firefighters should be familiar with the concept of protecting exposures in fire situations, usually in terms of protecting property that is exposed to a fire in order to keep it from spreading. However, at the hazmat scene, the same concept includes protecting the environment and protecting property that is threatened by an expanding incident, including closed containers and piping. Protecting environment and property includes both protecting exposures from fires involving hazardous materials and protecting the environment from the harmful effects of hazardous materials that are not burning. For example, diking a storm drain is a tactic that protects the environment from being exposed to, and harmed by, potentially toxic materials, figure 25.39. Protecting the environment. Environmental damage is also an important concern. The air, surface water, wildlife, water table, and land surrounding an incident may be seriously affected by released materials. Water used during fire control activities may become contaminated with pollutants or other hazardous materials. The non-biodegradable nature of many materials means that the consequences of contamination may take years for the full effect to be realized. The result of contamination may also require large sums of money to repair. All released materials and runoff need to be confined and held until their effect on the environment can be determined. Protecting property. The property risk at hazardous materials incidents is similar to that created by other fire hazards, except that the threatening material may not always be readily evident. Flammable and toxic gases, mists, and vapors can contaminate and pose an ignition threat with no visible signs. Protective actions must be tailored to the material, its properties, and any reactions to the proposed protective medium. ICES may appropriately decide not to save property when operations pose a risk. Lives or the environment must not be unduly compromised to save property. Product control. When hazardous materials escape their containers, emergency responders may need to perform product control at incidents. There are two main product control strategies, one primarily defensive and one offensive. Spill control is a defensive strategy that attempts to confine a hazardous material that has been released from its container. Leak control is an offensive strategy that attempts to contain a material in its original container, or transfer it to another container, figure 25.40. Fire control. Most hazmat incidents involve flammable materials. Fire control is the strategy used to prevent ignition and/or extinguish the fire when hazardous materials are involved. Tactics may include using fire-fighting foam or water depending on the situation and the product involved.